This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA, and since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic talking to another, only alcoholics may participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Michael C. and Sue, they have the list of such groups with their phone numbers, and they would be happy to help you. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful for your recovery and or your understanding. Katie will now read the preamble.
My name is Katya. I'm an alcoholic. And this is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, to urge the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Heather will now read the steps.
Hi, I'm Heather. I'm an alcoholic. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Richard will read the traditions.
Richard, alcoholic. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA recovery. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Colleen.
Hi, everybody. I'm Colleen. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm really happy to be here tonight. My sobriety date is August 3rd of 2004. My sponsor is Laura R., and the Atlantic Group is my home group. And I really haven't had time to get very nervous. I took a cab here, and because the president was in town, I was running a little late, so I pulled the cab over and grabbed one of those little pedicabs and got a bicycle ride here. So that was fun. It means a lot to me to be here tonight. And, thank you, Amanda, for asking me to speak. I know that when I was first asked to speak, my initial reaction as an alcoholic was, fear and oh my gosh, I can't, just fear. And really quickly, I spoke to another alcoholic, and, I was just so moved to be up here. It really, really is an honor, to be the kind of alcoholic that I was, that always, was just sucking the energy out of life, never putting back any energy into anything, and just take. So to be here, 2 years sober, and be able to have some hope to share is a miracle, and it's definitely by the grace of God. And Alcoholics Anonymous and sponsorship. For me, I started drinking in about seventh grade, and I had a couple shots of vodka, and I immediately just loved it. I was on a beach, and I didn't get too drunk, and I felt like, oh my God, this is the key to life. Why don't people drink this stuff like water? I really didn't understand that. I really didn't. And I can actually remember asking my father that. So that's how I started drinking. And right away, I was the one that kind of introduced alcohol to all my friends. I said, you have to try this, you have to try drinking. And they didn't have the same reaction that I did. They would be like, I don't want any more, Colleen. Like, I'm done. And they would put the beer down. And me, I just looked at them so baffled. I could not believe that people could do that. Until the day I stopped drinking, I could not understand that. It was a foreign concept to me. Some of the other things that come along with my alcoholism, I mentioned fear. Another moment where it became very clear to me that I was different than those around me was I was in the car with my father, and I was talking about something, and I think it was just simply going into work one day when I was in high school, and I just had like this blanket of fear over me, and he looked at me like I was a different creature, and he just said, "Kyle, what are you so afraid of?" And I didn't know, I didn't know what I was so afraid of, but I knew that he wasn't walking around with the same fear as me. And that's something that I walked with, every day. And I drank over that fear, because, when I drank, I didn't have to feel that feeling. And I was capable. And, without that alcohol, I didn't feel very capable. So, You know, I loved alcohol. I loved it, and I couldn't imagine my life without it. You know, it revolved around everything. Everything I did revolved around alcohol. I didn't go to the movie theaters in high school or college because you couldn't drink. That was the kind of alcoholic, you know, that I am. And you know, it was fun for a while until, you know, like it talks about in Bill's story, just that boomerang that just comes back at you. And I found myself totally baffled. I didn't know how my friends seemed to be able to function so well. You know, the college application process, all of that stuff, I just felt in the dark about and ill-equipped. So, you know, what really started to suffer, I was pretty young when I first came into AA, was my relationships with my family. You know, my first moment, I guess, of revelation was, you know, I could never have kids because I loved alcohol above everything else, and I would leave my children. I can never get married because I would cheat on my husband because I never know what I'm going to do when I drink. And I realized that, you know, I had to, that nobody was going to do this for me. And I was really scared for my life. I came in, I put some time together, I rested on my laurels, and, you know, I picked up. I didn't see it coming at all. I was sober for a little while. And, you know, that's really important for me to remember. Because it's so easy. It's so easy for me to pick up a drink if I'm not doing the work in this program. You know, when I came back in 2 years ago, by the grace of God, I got a sponsor. I got a home group. And, you know, I was still walking around with all that fear and terrified that I was going to drink again. And then I got my current sponsor that I have now, who I looked at her, you know, we were sitting at a Starbucks, and I just saw a light in her eyes, and I said to her, I said, "You have God working in your life, don't you?" And she looked at me and she said, "Yes, I do." And I couldn't answer that question that same way. I wanted God in my life, but I didn't have God working in my life like she did. So I asked her to be my sponsor, and she's taken me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what a difference it is to come into this program and to do the work and to, you know, try to live the steps on a daily basis and help another alcoholic, as opposed to coming into AA, just going to meetings and not really trying to live the way that this program suggests. Today, you know, I heard someone speak last night, and they talked about getting their first coin chip and how their chip was a white chip, and it signifies surrender, and just having that moment of, oh my gosh, I don't have to fight anymore. And, you know, I struggled every day when I was drinking, and I still struggle at times today, but not like before. I really have been given a peace, you know, that I'm able to have every day, as long as, you know, it's contingent upon my spiritual basis. That's the biggest gift, is that I'm really pretty comfortable in my own skin, and that was something that I never had before. And to be able to walk around with the freedom, and the more I give my life to the care of God, the more my life just opens up hugely. Everything I've ever wanted to do is happening, and more. It really is, and I didn't believe that when I first came into this program. I just thought that you guys were, you know, it was lip service. I really didn't believe it. So if you're new, you know, just, it's definitely worth taking all the suggestions and just trying it this way for a little while. And, you know, I've been amazed. I can just speak for myself that I've been amazed at my life today. And, you know, it truly is a joy to show up at AA. And it's a gift not to walk around with that fear, and not to mention be chained to alcohol. You know, I can walk anywhere today, and I don't have to have that crutch of alcohol, which before this I just couldn't imagine. And you know, I want to thank God. I want to thank God for bringing me here, because today I know it's not me. You know, it's you guys, it's everyone here, and we have such a wonderful home group, and it's the grace of God, and, you know, just showing up and putting in the footwork, and thank you so much.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Bobby.
Hi, my name's Bobby, and I'm an alcoholic. And I don't ever remember being this nervous in my life. I did have time to get nervous, and I've used it. I'm real grateful to be here tonight. I'm real grateful to be alive and sober. I love AA, and I love the Atlantic group. You are my home group. I don't know too many of you, because I am overwhelmed by crowds. And so I kind of hide over there, and I do the thank you and make a little loop, and I'm out the door. And so this is a great opportunity that you've afforded me, and I'm really grateful for it. I just want to acknowledge the sponsors that I've had in my life. Paul Kay from Bayonne, who took me through the book when I was a newcomer, and then Ava, who worked with me for 2 years after that, and Larry from Staten Island, who currently is helping me. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with an honest desire to stop drinking on December 2nd, 1984. And my sobriety date is March 15th, 2003. And I don't know if anybody else here has a problem with that, but if you knew me when I was drinking, you would. I was a living nightmare. You know, that's been removed. I don't have to behave that way anymore. So I got the home group. Oh, I'm more than halfway through with 9. The promises are coming true for me, and I practice 10, 11, and 12. And so I guess we should start at the beginning. I'm the son of a Southern Baptist crap kicker. He was raised on a tobacco farm in Virginia. My mother was a daughter of dairy farmers from New York, and they both moved out to California. My mom was working at McDonnell Douglas, and my dad was a career military. And they get together, and they fall in love, and they decide to have this beautiful little family, and they have me, and out comes this little gay thing that they have no idea what to do with. And so it's not a good fit from the get-go. And I can give you a snapshot of not a good fit. My dad was this, like, jacked up mook, tattooed, you know, from here to there. Like, kind of like, you ever watch Pup? I remember that guy, Bluto? That was my dad. And dad's job was, he was an electrician for the Navy, and he'd have to crawl through these little holes on the ship and fix things. And he's a big guy, and so he'd come home, and he'd be, like, sweaty and dirty, and he'd pull up in the blue Chevy Bel Air, and I'd be on the front lawn twirling my sister's baton. Like, welcome home. Yeah. So that's a snapshot of not a good fit. And so they decided they were going to fix me, and they were going to buy me things that would fix me. So Mom said, he's gay, we should just go with it, you know, like, feed that. And so Mom bought me one of those light brights, you know. It was bright and colorful. And Dad said, no, we got to make a man out of them. So Dad bought me an Erector set. So I used the Erector set to dismantle the light bright, and it became footlighting for the APM shows on the front lawn. So that's kind of my home life. So as you can imagine, it wasn't really comfortable. And I was told from a very young age that I was bad and that I was wrong. And, you know, just really, like, evil things. And blue-collar neighborhood, kids weren't very fond of me either. So, you know, I felt generally pretty bad about myself, pretty uncomfortable constantly. And somewhere between the 5th and the 6th grade, Mom and Dad went away, and I knew where the liquor cabinet was, and I entered it. I had my first drink, And I remember it going down, and I remember it wanting to come back up. It was gin, Seagram's gin in a 7-Up bottle. And I remember, like a good alcoholic who never had a drink before, holding it in. We're getting this thing down. If you get the first one down, I didn't know that then. I got the first one down. And you guys know what happened, right? We get that warm feeling. It shoots through the veins. And all of a sudden, yeah, this is it. This is what I'm looking for. This is good stuff. So fifth and sixth grade, and I found my solution for life already. It's already amazing to me. And I would run with that solution. You know, that solution would carry me through high school. And I got out of high school, and I went to work for a record company. And I had immediate success. And shortly thereafter, I had no job. Because that's what alcohol does to me over and over again. I was able to put it down for periods of time and make great achievements. And then I would pick up the alcohol and everything would be removed again. The pain would be removed, but also all the good things would be removed. See, because the only thing that I remember as an alcoholic was the sense of ease and comfort that I got that first time I took the drink, that this is good. It didn't matter what happened. 2 days ago, yesterday, it didn't matter. I would remember that feeling every time I took a drink. So I lose the job at the record company. I go to work in discos, and I cross the line. It ceases to be a luxury, and it becomes a nightmare really, really quickly. And I'm quite young. So it's December 2nd, 1984. So I have a gratitude exercise. I'm going to take 30 seconds of your time with it, or 30 seconds of my time. if everybody would just close their eyes and just for 10 seconds, remember what you used to be like before you came into AA. Maybe remember the last run, the last drink. And then for the next 10, just think about what happened when you got here. And for the last 10, think about what you're like today. Thanks. So that was more than for me than for you because I lost my place on my outline. But I see a lot of smiles and I know a lot of people are pretty grateful. But not everybody here is grateful when they think about that last part. I was one of those people for a long time. You see, because I came in December 2nd, 1984, but I didn't stay. And I spent the next 14 years in... 17 years in 14 mental hospitals, detoxes, rehabs, jails and institutions, countless emergency rooms for the consequences of alcoholism, like dehydration, broken ribs. There was a time I overdosed from Jack Daniels and cocaine. There was a time in the Hamptons where I was running out of liquor and there was very little left, and I injected it. You know, and the crowning jewel of my consequences, one night I got filled with alcohol and then with self-pity and ran in front of cars on a highway until one hit me. You know, and that's what 17 years sitting around in the fellowship of AA, trying to treat a spiritual malady with mediocre diner food and bad group therapy takes me, you know. So, you know, I'm not going to go through a blow by blow, but... 3.5 years ago, I came back to AA after a one-night relapse, and I was approached by a man, and he told me that he was very afraid for me and that I was probably going to die if I didn't follow his directions, and I agreed with him. His name is Stewie. He's going to speak here next month, and he spoke to me about God. Now, the only God I knew was the God of my parents. And that was not a loving God. You know, I was a horrible fag and I was going to die. I was a sinner. And he spoke to me and he told me that I needed to find a God of my own understanding. And this made sense to me for the first time in my life. Something made sense to me in AA. And He gave me some very simple directions that day, and that was to go home and pray. And he asked me if I would do that, and I said I didn't know what to pray for, and he told me just to pray to be sober. And I did that, and it worked. I didn't drink that day. And it wasn't easy. there's a lot of self-will involved. Thank you. But I followed that direction. I did stay sober that day. And at the end of the day, I called him and I asked him what to do. And he said, you know, you should thank God. And I did that. Over time, I grew in belief and faith in this program. And he showed me a new way of doing alcoholics. It was new to me, not to you, and not to Alcoholics Anonymous. He hooked me up with a sponsor, and we went through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I took the steps quickly, rapidly, in succession, exactly as written in that book. And I'm here for the guy who's like me, the guy who's been relapsing for 14 years and who's hopeless and desperate and perhaps suicidal. I'm here to tell you that that way worked for me, that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and following the directions worked for me. Since my third step, I have not had a desire to drink, and I've been through some pretty rough things. The obsession has been lifted, and because the obsession has been lifted, I don't take the first drink, and because I don't take the first drink, I don't crave it. And if I don't crave, I don't go on senseless sprees. My life has become wonderful, better than I could have ever imagined, and it's available to everybody here. Thanks.
Our main speaker tonight is Heidi.
Hi, everybody. My name is Heidi, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, thank you so much, Vince, for asking me to speak, and I'm just going to cry right away. This is my home group, and I love this group so much, and, I don't know, like, how do you get from where I was when I came into AA to, like, a girl who has hair that's brushed, and, like, I look like a grown-up, and I really, 16 years ago, I wouldn't have been caught dead wearing a suit. One of my resentments on my first four-step was the principle of responsibility, because I felt that people were responsible. I think the exact wording was, it just seems so, like, stupid to be dutiful and just do what you're told, And, I'm wearing a suit jacket, and I left my apartment without this coat because I didn't like the way it looked, and then I went back to my apartment and got it because, because I remembered Francine last week. She was wearing a coat, and, I have like two suit jackets, and so I wear them when I speak. And anyway, I have such respect for Alcoholics Anonymous because pretty much everything that I have in my life I owe to this program. I turned 32 this year, which means that I've been sober now half my life. And I got to tell you, this thing still feels very new to me. Like, I still feel very excited about the program, and I'm still really amazed. And how I do that is I stay active in my home group and I sponsor people. So I get to see, I get to see other people growing, and I work with my sponsor, and I write 10 steps, and I try to stay eager, my nickname, I'll just share this, as some of you know, is Eager Beaver. Because I'm excited, and I'm like, yeah, let's go, actually, just a sidebar, a little something funny. Ava and I actually found this article about beavers, and there's actually a scientific study of them. They're very compulsive, and that's how they make those dams, because they're very, like, they have an obsessive mind. So I think it's actually, like, a very perfect sort of metaphor for me. But anyway, like I said, I'm an alcoholic, and basically what that means is that I'm bodily and mentally different from my fellows. I really have found, when I first got sober, it was really important to me that I came from an alcoholic home, and I really wanted everybody to know that my parents were alcoholics. And before I get into this, I just want to say, if anyone is, I listened to a tape of my first sponsor, Annette, this afternoon, because she passed away a few years ago, and I just wanted to hear her voice, and just hear what she had to say. And one of the things she said is she said, you know, I bet some of you are sitting there thinking, what's a nice little old lady doing in Alcoholics Anonymous? And, you know, so sometimes what I say is, like, I wonder sometimes if people are thinking, what's this nice girl? What can she possibly have to share with me? You know, and sometimes when I say, I got sober at 16, you know, and, you know, I just want to encourage you, if anyone's thinking, you know what, I'm not going to identify with this girl. She doesn't look like me. Her story doesn't sound like mine. You know, some of you will identify because there are a lot of young people. But I just want to, you know, one thing that I was taught in early on in AA that was so valuable to me was to identify with the feelings and not the facts. Because alcoholism is not about, for me, it's not about how much I drank, you know, what I drank, you know, the crazy things I did when I drank, what kind of drunk I was. It's about what happened to me when I took that drink. And then how, when I put that drink down, I couldn't live a normal life. You know, I was filled with resentment and fear. So I'll just start at the beginning. Thank you so much, Vince, for asking me to speak. And Vince actually asked me to speak at my wedding. And that's like another, you know, thing. Like, I've been married now a little over 3 weeks. And, you know, I mean, like, again, you know, this is really something that, I mean, I just, I didn't take my veil off for half my reception because I was like, I'm actually wearing a veil. Like, I couldn't believe it, you know? And, you know, I just wasn't a girl. Like, if you knew me when I was growing up, I just wasn't a girl that was, like, planning my wedding at age 5 or at age 8. Like, I just, it wasn't in the cards for me. I didn't even think about going to college, you know? I just didn't think about these things. That just wasn't in the cards. I thought about Sylvia Plath and how she ended her life by sticking her head in the oven, you know? And that's, and then I thought about her poetry and what it meant to me, you know? And I stayed up all night and I smoked cigarettes and I drank and I stole. And that's, like, that's pretty much what I aspired to. And anyway, I grew up in, I did grow up around alcoholism, and you know, both my parents probably could qualify. I don't really diagnose my dad anymore. I just say that he's, you know, he has an attachment to alcohol. He likes to drink, because it's just better for me not to really diagnose him, because I found for me in a lot of inventory work that I've done that I have this movie and this story that I love to tell, that I'm this victim and it was so hard for me, you know. And there's plenty of people that really had it much worse than me, and really, you know, if I keep telling these stories, like, you know, one of the defects that my sponsor and I came up with was storytelling, because I like to tell this story, you know. And so I even have to be careful sometimes when I'm sharing my experience, strength, and hope with another person, that I'm not, like, you know, being dramatic, you know. And actually, I just was talking to someone that I sponsored today about this. We did a part of a fifth step today, and, you know, it's fun sometimes to sort of retell these stories, but the problem for me is that I will get riled up again, you know, and I'll like keep this, you know, it's like I hit play again on like sort of the, you know, on the movie about me as this sort of victimized child who just, you know, never had a shot, and like, you know, and the truth is, like, I'm now, like, I live a really good life, you know, and, you know, it's, like Bonnie always says, like, it was cute at 5, but not at 32. Like, it was, you know, it was, yeah, like, I wasn't at fault for these things when I was a young child. But now, like, how am I going to live my life differently? Anyway, so basically, you know, the thing that is different about growing up in an alcoholic home, or that I feel like did sort of, you know, help me, is I had alcohol around me faster. You know, I saw people drinking, and I saw that it was a solution. I saw that, you know, my parents drinking. I saw a lot of things that a lot of little kids shouldn't see. When I was 7, I wasn't sort of playing with dolls. Primarily, I was dressing up in, like, sort of provocative outfits, putting makeup on, feather boas, you know, sequin berets. Like, this was, you know, I was very much, I wanted to be older than I was. And, you know, and I'm so hot. I'm going to have to take this off. That's okay, right? Yeah, okay. Anyway, so I had, like, I grew up with this idea, you know, that my outsides were very important. I never felt like I fit in. You know, all that ism stuff, even before I picked up a drink. We moved a lot when I was a kid. We loved moving. My mom loved moving. And I still, like, I've struggled. I struggled this last apartment I just moved out of. I remember calling Ava and being like, I want to move, like, every year. And her being like, why do you got to move again? Why do you got to move? And I just, all I wanted to do was, like, put my stuff in the garbage bags and find a new apartment. Because that's, you know, like, that's what I was used to. And it was so good for me to stay in my own apartment for 4 whole years, you know, by myself. But anyway, so, you know, we moved a lot and we switched schools a lot. So I quickly became, like, I learned how to sort of make fast friends and, you know, sort of fit in very quickly and tell you what you wanted to hear. And I learned how to, like, you know, just all the chaos at home. And then just before I was going to walk in the door, like, pull up my sock and, like, walk in and be, like, a good little eager beaver, like a good little girl. And I really thrived on that approval. I loved that approval. You know, and when I was a kid, I was a happy kid, you know, but it's funny, I was a happy kid on the outside, but my primary memory of being a child is just feeling like I was always kind of apart from, you know, always feeling like I was apart from, and you know, I remember, actually, this memory came back to me a few months, like 6 months ago. I remember when I was 7, we went through a period where we weren't allowed to have candy. And so I was in the grocery store with my mother, and of course I'll show her, you know. So I was just putting some candy down my pants because I was going to steal it, and it slid out my pant leg. And I was 5 years old, and I looked up at the cashier, and she was looking right at me, and she said, "Where's your mother?" And just like that, without missing a beat, I said, "Oh, must have fallen on the floor." And I just quickly got myself out of the store, and that memory came back to me, and I thought, wow, even at that age, I had such a quick, dishonest response. Like, I knew very quickly to lie, you know. And what happened is around 10, things were getting bad at home, and I decided to move out. because what else does a 10-year-old budding alcoholic do when things are rough at home? You know, my you know, sister, who's now just started Al-Anon, stayed, and I was like, I'm out of here, you know. And so I went to my mom and I said, I want to move in with Aunt Becky in California, 3 states away. And she went to my dad, and, you know, like, happens in families where there's, you know, whatever. My dad was like, sure, you know. And so I moved in with my aunt, and around that time, around Christmas time, after living with my aunt for about 6 months, you know, my mom went into treatment, and you know, a lot of you know this part of my story. And my mom getting sober, really, you know, what happened is, you know, it's not like I stopped drinking then. I actually, it's interesting to me because she started the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she went through a treatment program. And the treatment programs always, they sort of educate the family, and you know, and so they educated my sister and I, and we learned words like propensity for the disease and heredity, and we learned about how, you know, like, you're probably going to inherit this illness. So I had all this self-knowledge, you know, and how Bill W. in his story talks about, like, self-knowledge avails us nothing. And, you know, I had all this self-knowledge. I learned that I would probably be an alcoholic if I took a drink. And, you know, it's amazing. You know, my sister didn't have this idea, came out of the same family. Within 6 months, I had the idea, like, the thought struck me that stealing alcohol from my father would be a good idea, you know, and so I did, you know. And I was listening to, I think, Colleen, your description of and Bobby as well, your description of the first time you took a drink, you know, and just that warm feeling that went down. And also another line I really like in Bill's story is, he says, in the midst of the excitement, I discovered liquor. I really keyed in on that sentence because I don't think that normal people discover liquor. And for me, it was like a discovery. You know, I was like, wow, this is great. This feels great. You know, I suddenly was a different person. I felt like I had, you know, I had control over my own life, you know, and I felt glamorous, and I felt, you know, and pretty much what happened for me is, you know, when I first got sober, I used to feel like I had to, I was afraid for a couple years that that somebody in AA would kick me out because they'd say, you know, I went through this whole sort of alcoholic thinking, like, have I really hit bottom? Oh my God, what if I haven't really hit bottom? Like, you know, oh my, I was terrified that I was going to have to go out again because I was like, God, no, please. It was such hell. I don't want to go out again. So I just want to tell anyone who's sitting here thinking sort of like, if you're out, it's basically for me, it's my alcoholism that tells me, you know, well, have you really hit bottom? Have you really hit bottom? You know, and it's like, you know what? You can get off anytime you want. Your bottom is your bottom, and that's, you know, that's it. You know, that is just it. Because, you know, and what I've learned is that my disease will use any excuse. Well, oh, you're too young, you're too this, you're too that. You know, there could be any number of excuses. So, you know, what happened for me is I just started drinking, and because I have the allergy, I couldn't stop drinking. And, you know, Bobby, I have to thank you for that meditation, because the vision that came to me when you said to think about where you were, you know, before you came into AA, was I felt like the pieces of puke, dried up puke in my hair, you know, and this black sweatshirt and these, like, you know, boxer shorts I used to wear. And, you know, and I'd come down at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon after sleeping it off, and I would, you know, drink some Coke and have some Doritos. And like, that was, you know, that was how I lived. And, you know, it just progressed really fast for me. There weren't any, I don't have any glamorous like social drinking stories at all. You know, I don't have any like, you know, Studio 54. It was like drinking in the woods, or like, you know, drinking before the dance, or like getting some older guy to buy it for me and my girlfriends. And like, you know, like off in a vestibule, you know, off the ferry boat, and just drink it away, you know, just drink it away and just drink up some courage, you know, so that I could feel okay in my skin, you know. And that's really what it was like. And, you know, in the ism, what happened is the ism progressed, you know. I don't know why that just made me so sad. I think I just saw myself, you know, going to the prom, you know, and just needing to, like, fuel up. And you know, I went from being a straight A student to not being able to show up in school. You know, I changed all my friends. You know, I just basically changed my life to suit my new lifestyle. And you know, if you could give it to me, I would take it. You know, I don't have you know, I just you know, I just did a lot of things I became an alcoholic. That's my alcoholism progressed. And, you know, all through this time, my mother was dropping in every now and then and taking me to meetings. And I would go to these open meetings, and I would, you know, they would ask me if I wanted to share. And I would be like, oh, yeah, I'm Heidi. You know, I don't know what I am, but thank you so much for helping my mom. And then my mom would take me back to my dad's, and I would probably get drunk. And so what started to happen is, some of you know, like, if you've had exposure to AA and then you're still drinking, it's like really awful and confusing. And, you know, so I spent a lot of time at parties being like, yeah, my parents are both alcoholics, so I really got to watch it, you know. And, you know, and so that's pretty much how, you know, what it was like for me. And then I would, you know, at 15, I was like making list of goals: get an A in French, keep my room clean, cut down on drinking. You know, like, this just isn't normal. Like, you know, writing in my little journal, like, okay, I'm not going to drink for 2 weeks, and then finding myself drunk again. And, you know, basically what happened is my mom got a, I want to get to the solution because it's obviously a lot. And my mom got a job in a new town. So I did what I love to do. I moved in with her a couple hours away, and I decided I was going to quit drinking, become a good girl again. I thought it was just as easy as that, that I'd just put the plug in the jug and all my problems would be solved. And what happened is, you know, I moved in with my mom, and, you know, I had 9 months of, like, hellacious dry time where I was, like, literally punching my own face. I was so miserable. I mean, it was horrible. I got into therapy. I don't know what we could have possibly talked about. You know, I was in a drug and alcohol support group. I was sort of drifting in and out of meetings. You know, I had all these old timers that were, I actually went to NA a lot, even though I have, like, I've like very little drugs in my story at all. Like I, but it was just easier for me to, it, for this is for me, like to identify as an addict because it was sort of general and broad, like alcoholic. Ugh, that's a little specific, you know, like I was just, you know, and you know what I mean? Like, so I'd just be like, yeah, I'm Heidi. I'm an addict because probably lots of writers and rock stars were addicts and those were my heroes. You know, I could identify with that. But what happened is after 9 months of being dry in AA, I had a complete, you know, I had a complete meltdown, and you know, I reached this point where actually my mom, what happened is I reached this point where I realized, like, you know, or it hit me or something. God helped me realize, like, who am I doing this for? Who's the alcoholic here? This is not about my mother. This is about me. And I reached this point where I either wanted to kill myself or I wanted to, all I could imagine, I just saw the deli. My mom was like, what do you want? And I saw the deli up the street and I pictured all the rows and rows of beer and alcohol and those, and I didn't know that there was a third option, which is AA. And what happened for me is the next week I went to this meeting called the Here and Now Group of Port Angeles. If you're ever in Port Angeles, please go to this group. It's like a pocket of enthusiasm. It's amazing. I went there and I met Gary and Armand, and they're actually, I have a picture of them, and it's sitting in the pew, sitting in the pew as if they're here. But these two men, you know, really changed my life, and I sort of garbled out some cry for help. And Armand, you know, I love that he did this. He didn't say, keep coming back, you know, or thanks for sharing. He looked right at me, and the whole table looked right at me and said, do you have a sponsor? And I said, no. And it was the first time that someone had asked me a direct question and that I had been, you know, invited to give a direct answer. And so the next week, right? So the next week, I was like, I was seriously like, you know, it was like so exciting. I had a direction. I had an like, I work really well with clear directions. I was like, get a sponsor, get a sponsor. And I looked across the table and there was this little old lady with curly white hair with crazy jewelry on. And she was just, you know, very flamboyant, and so I went up to her after the meeting, and I said, hi, my name is Heidi McAllister. Will you be my sponsor? I'm looking for a sponsor. Will you be my sponsor? And she just looked at me, are you an alcoholic? And I said, yes, I am. And I think that was the first time I ever said that I was an alcoholic. And, you know, the beauty of having Annette as my first sponsor is that, you know, she was the oldest member of the group. And she really, you know, she was set to drink herself to death. She didn't get sober till she was 63, you know. And she really taught me that, you know, you can be too old, you can be too young, you can be too this, you can be too that. But, you know, if you're ready and you mean business, then you can stay. You know, even if you don't mean business sometimes, who cares, you know? Just stay. But anyway, so she was the oldest member of the group, and I was the youngest member of the group. And we just did, you know, we did what we do. I just did everything she said, you know. I got a service commitment at the home group. You know, I learned to, like, if somebody came in late to the meeting, to, like, get up and get them a chair and make them feel welcome at my home group. You know, I, like... You know, we met each week and we read the book and you know, Annette, I just want to get into the steps. Like the way that Annette explained the first three steps to me is, you know, and I love, it's like so simple. I love this. She said, step one, do you think you're an alcoholic or not? Okay, yes. Okay, so I'm on board with step one. I've taken step one. I know I'm an alcoholic. Step two, do you think AA can work for you? And step three, are you going to do AA or not? Right? And like that's as clear and as simple as she kept it. And for me, that just cut through a lot of my sort of vague, hazy, like kind of like, you know, we took our step three together. And I remember I wrote down the date. It was September 3rd, 1991. And I wrote it down on this little prayer card because I thought that after that time, I was just going to be walking hand in hand with my higher power. And, you know, it wasn't. Like, I got in my little beat up Honda and then, like, had to go to my, like, you know, Mexican restaurant, like, bus girl job, you know, and, like, learn to grow up a little bit. But, you know, basically, I just followed Annette, and I just want to speed up because I know that my time is limited. You know, I just did everything that she said, and you know, it's so amazing to think. Like, I made this sort of Ava about 5 months ago. I had to speak for like an hour at this group, and Ava was like, "Make an outline." You know, and Vince, you remember, you were there, and so I did. I made an outline. I made like a timeline of my life. And you know, there's a lot of sort of hurdles that I've gone through in sobriety. There's a lot of, like, just business that's happened, you know, a lot of stuff. And as I was writing these sort of bullet points of like these hurdles that have come up in my sobriety, I found that I kept writing, but I had a home group, you know, just a couple of highlights. You know, at 2.5 years, I was in a hospital. 2.5 years sober, involved in a home group, working the steps. I was in a hospital and then had to go to a halfway house, you know, for 6 months for another you know, emotional disorder. And, you know, and I just, that's an outside issue, but I just share that because I didn't have to drink over that, you know, and because, you know, I had Gary and Armand and the entire, like, AA home group sending me cards and, like, you know, just, kid, keep coming back, kid, you can do it, you know, kid, you know, and, you know, and then it was like, you know, suddenly the big book and the steps, like, came alive for me again in a new way, you know, and, I actually, you know, I applied to college while I was in this hospital, and I actually remember I got my acceptance letter to college while I was in this halfway house in Miami, and you know, it was amazing, and you know, I went to college, and you know, I went to this great college where you know, and what did I do? Like, how did I feel like I fit in? You know, I went to the like drug and alcohol free housing. You know, and I got involved with a home group, another home group. I found the Big Book home group. And, you know, and while I was in Olympia, just to kind of another highlight, I met a guy and we became engaged. And he was a guy who was sober. And about this takes me up to about 7 years ago, we split up, and 7 years, I think it was 6 or 7 years ago that I actually came to the Atlantic group, and I was coming up, oh, it was 6 years ago, I'm sorry, I was coming up on 10 years sober, and I had moved across the country, and I lived in New York for a couple years, and, you know, like I said, I really do well with, like, very succinct instruction, and for some reason, I was not really sort of, I wasn't current in a 10-step, I remember the first time I went to that Thursday beginners meeting, I don't know if anyone remembers, but I said, my name's Heidi, I'm an alcoholic, I'm not really sure what step I'm on, I'm looking for a new sponsor, and I'm looking for a new home group, and, you know, thinking about that now, like, my ego says, like, whoa, how embarrassing that you had to say, but it's like, at that time, I didn't feel that because I was, you know, I was hungry, I needed a sponsor, and I needed a home group. It was just honest, you know, so again, like, if anyone's sitting here, like, thinking, oh, God, I can't be honest about where I'm at because I have X amount of time, or I have, you know, I've been around this long, like, that's, you know, that's ego, you know, for me, it is, and, you know, even before the meeting, I spoke to Bonnie, and I was saying, you know, I'm not perfect yet, and, you know, and I was just writing, thank you, I was just writing inventory this weekend, you know, some resentments and some fears, and it's like, you know what, it's the same cast of characters, here we are again, you know, but the thing is that I can recognize them, you know, a little bit quicker, and then I'm a little more willing to let go of them, and, you know, right before the meeting, actually, I had a conversation with my sponsor, and one of our little expressions that we use is you're sucking the air out of the universe. And I just gotta tell you actually that like a few years ago, I think that would have like, if I heard that, I'm so touchy and sensitive and self-centered that I would have been like, you know, I would have like slashed my wrist and be like, I can't believe she said that to me. She hates me. I'm the worst person in the world. Because for a long time, like working this program and doing inventory and writing those, you know, I thought that the 4-step was all about like, find out what a horrible, selfish, self-centered person you are. And then, you know, ask God to please, like, you know, if he can even stand you, you know, to like just, you know, and then like maybe a sponsor will take you back, you know, and it's just, you know, it's just not about that. Like, I just, you know, I really have, like, I find, like, the more and more I study this book and more I get into these steps, it's so loving. Like, there's sentences in the Big Book, like, but cheer up, you know, like, you know, I mean, I just think that's so fabulous. But cheer up, you know, like, and like, you know, like that one line, like our own conception, however inadequate, was significant. You know, it's talking about building a relationship with a higher power, and the book talks about like how whatever conception that you have of a higher power, like however crappy it is, like is good enough to start trying, you know? And you know, I still feel like that sometimes today. I just, you know, all this time around here, I've had a really hard time learning to meditate, and I got to tell you, I have like a few back-to-back days of being able to sit for 5 minutes. And I know it's a miracle to me because I want to like shoot out of bed and start returning phone calls. And, you know, I want to like do page 86 and 87 and then like I'm on my way, you know. And I really have had to learn to sit still. And, you know, so I came to this group about, I know I'm like totally running out of time, but I came to this group about 6 years ago and I needed a sponsor and I asked Ava and she said, I don't know, you know, like I think she just gotten back from a business trip. She said, but I got an extra seat in the car to this big book study this weekend. And like I'd been taught to do from the beginning, I said, okay, you know, even though I had to work, I got the shifts covered. I went to this big book study and I went around with Melissa and Ava and, you know, I went to Bagels and Big Book and, you know, I really had to start from scratch. I mean, I had to like find an apartment because I split up with this ex-fiance. You know, Ava brought me dishes, which I've now passed on to Katya. Like this program is just so beautiful and so big, like because now I'm married and like we got dishes. I can't even tell you. So with just the couple minutes that I have left, I just want to talk about like where my life is today. So yeah, like I have dishes that match. No. But like it's so retarded, but it's very, it's beyond that. I mean, that is an external thing. It's an external thing that I have like a nice pretty glass jar for my cotton balls. But like, that's just not where I came from. I come from vague. I come from throw it anywhere. You know, I come from like just hating myself, you know, and, you know, I married this wonderful man, who is not in AA, but continues to learn, I guess, to educate him about alcoholism. And just really quickly, last night we were at dinner, and this maitre d' sent over 2 glasses of Moscato d'Asti and just set them right in front of us. I mean, I never drank Moscato d'Asti, like, when I was drinking, you know? And I had a moment where I was like, it was just so little, and so, like, it's a little flute. And I, you know, I was just like, I was like, it, like, freaked me out. And thank you. And we left the restaurant and I went up to the maitre d' and I said, thank you so much. I just don't drink. I didn't, you know, thank you for the gesture. And, you know, and I said to my husband, I said, yeah, he doesn't understand. I'm an alcoholic. And that one little bit of liquor could ruin my entire life. It could kill me. And, you know, and whether or not he understands that, I understand that, you know, and I'm so grateful to be sober. And, you know, I love AA so much. And, you know, just really quickly, I remember I heard somebody with 19 days and I remember 19 days because it was the first time at 19 days, it was the first time I realized I hadn't had a drink. And it's such a long time. I remember just being like, oh my God, 19 days, that's so long. You know, and that is a long time. And, anyway, I'm so excited to keep growing alongside all of you, and you all just inspire me so much, and I love you, and thank you.